Today is March 28th. We're competing with the construction outside. We're learning Moshe, developing the Moshe as prophet and leader. And we are, until now, we've been doing a lot of material with Bamidbar. Bamidbar is usually considered the Sefer of the Torah, where Moshe's leadership is most challenged. But we'll see that you know, he doesn't go, he's right after Yetzias Mitzrayim. He's open up to Shmos Perek Yudalad now, and you'll see that Moshe is tested right away. Okay, in Perek Yudalad in Pasuk Yud, right? I mean, it's the Mishnah in Ediot says that all the plagues took 1 year. Moshe was certainly humbled Paro, right? It's true, Kriyas Yamsuf hasn't happened yet. But Moshe has certainly humbled the Egyptians. But when the Israelites escape Egypt and they learn that Paro is chasing after them, right? So we discussed already that Moshe, at least according to Rashi, and according to Ibn Ezra also, Moshe had Paro believe that they were coming back after a 3-day journey into the desert, right? You're familiar with that. We're going to go out Derech Shloshes Yomim. We're going to serve our God out there. He's a very vengeful God. If you don't let us go, He's going to attack us. He's going to attack you, right? And all these plagues is because you wouldn't give us a three-day furlough. 3 days out, a day of service, 3 days back. That's why Pesach is 7 days. Okay? So when Paro hears that they continue out into the desert, Vayishma Paro ki baracha om, and he chases after them. And when the Israelites see that they're being chased, this is what we're up to right now, and this is the question I place before you. Rashi never doesn't deal with it, which is the following. And I assume that you'll be just make an assumption one way or the other. Is that if Paro thought that they were returning after 3 days, right? That they would come back, 3 days journey, a day of service, then 3 days to come back, right? Does anybody here think otherwise? Please tell me. But surely that's not what the B'nai Yisrael thought they were doing, right? God told them in the burning bush, you're going to take them to a land flowing with milk and honey. You're going to take them to the land I promised Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. We may have a moral question. If that is the case, then why did God tell Moshe to give Paro the mistaken impression? Right? Oh, we can deal with that. Right? Paro was not given one, not two, but three reasons to chase after them after all the AC. One, he was led to believe they're coming back. Two, they have all of this property that they borrowed from us. And now that they're not returning, right? How could Paro convince men after all that they had seen, after the 10th plague, to chase after these people? You don't think this is a setup? Right? The answer is, strike one, strike two. They thought that they're coming back. And, in the very least, returning all this jewelry we gave them, and all these animals we gave them, if the animals they're probably going to slaughter, but returning all this jewelry we gave them so that they could serve their God bedecked very nicely. Right? But three, perhaps more than anything. If you've ever seen, I mean, this is of course dependent on the opinion about where Kriyas Yamsuf is. But you know, here is the Mediterranean, right? Okay? Here's the Sinai Desert. You all with me so far?
Yeah.
Right? Okay. Most commentaries say that Kriyas Yamsuf is way down here. Further south than Eilat. There's a body of water. Saudi Arabia is going down here. It's Jordan, Syria, Lebanon. Okay? You all with me? However, there is a, according to many scholars, and there's a book called Atlas Karta. I don't know. It's all the maps that appear in the Torah, right? According to Atlas Karta, Kriyas Yamsuf was up here. What?
In the Mediterranean?
Yes, because what they did this, something like that. Take a look at a map of North Africa, and you'll see that there are all kinds of islands up here. And one of those has like an inlet like this. That goes like this. It's like a finger. But it doesn't reach land. See? It's like Long Island. It's maybe the size of Manhattan here, or like, you know, like from the water there to the Hudson. It's like 7-8 blocks. But it stretches out for miles, right? So if God took them into this little thing, because this is where Migdal and where Baal Zephon are, right? It says in the pasuk that's where they went. So if God took them into this, this is really strike three. There's even the movie, The Ten Commandments, picks up on it. Where Paro sees where they went, he says, their God is not a very good general. He's cornering them. Right? Strike one, I expect them to come back. They're not. Strike two, they have all our gold and silver. What are they running away with it? Strike three, they are fish in a barrel. Right? He didn't see the setup. This is an amazing setup. Right? They're going to get stuck right here. We're going to push them into the water. Right? And we'll take back our gold and silver and avenge our firstborn. Right? So, of course, there's a Gemara in Arachin, the Tesbov, that seems to say this. It was the Gozeri Absuf the Gzarim. It explains that they went like a rainbow. There's even a picture of the Gemara. I had an Aruch in here. I'd show you. Rashi drew a picture. It appears in the Perush. A little picture of how they crossed. And it said that they didn't like get up to the Hudson and then they just crossed into the Hudson, you know, to get to the other side. No. Right? And saying they came to a place where they went back to here. They did this. Okay. So, anyway, Lemaisa, Paro was sort of induced to chase after them. And Paro is not getting the setup, but more tragically, of course, is that Bnei Yisrael aren't getting it. God's purposely taking you into this precarious situation to enhance your salvation. Why didn't they sing Shira immediately upon being in Egypt? Why did they wait till the previous youngster to sing Shira?
Because say that the whole
what?
Well, basically, I was last year I was surrounded by talking about how the whole point of this strategy
I just gave you the priest rights that made them chase after.
The Egyptians chase after the seed and
Okay, so why not sing Shira? You see us in Tzrayim, you'd Shira say hallel on the beginning of Pesach.
But they thought they were going to either die in the desert or get caught.
Right, maybe, you know, they said they got to say dolo asulahem. They think, until then, it just one of says they were to avodim borkrim.
They
still felt like runaway slaves. Only when they saw Bayar Yisrael is Mitzrayim, there's a homily there. Get it? Bayar Yisrael is Mitzrayim, and they saw Sfasayim. What did they see dying there on the
homily?
They saw Egypt. No, they didn't see Egyptians. Of course, they were Egyptians. The bodies were washing ashore. They saw Egypt die. Get it?
So is
that
a metaphor, or is that like actually Egypt?
It's a metaphor for no, Egyptians, of course.
And so, but Mitzrayim being like they're
no going back.
Bondage, they're like
right. No going back. Yes.
Why do we have to say? Like, why do we have to ask in the beginning? Can we go away for 3 days in order to talk to God? I just don't understand the point.
Because
of that.
Basically,
was anything else going to happen?
Give you two answers. One answer is, you're right. It's not the truth. This is never our intention. The Israelites, of course, always intended to go further into the desert.
So
what good does that do for us, that we go? But the Torah just wanted to show how phenomenally obstinate Paro was. This whole crazy story is a lousy week off. Shabbat. Look what you did to your country, because you wouldn't even give them a week off.
So
They would have gone out, served their God, come back to their slavery. You couldn't even do that.
You could say probably thought that, like, just to take his side, probably thought that why would they take a week off? Like, the belly would leave.
All right, yeah, okay. Paro himself is quite sure that he uses a bit of that when he says, okay, I'll let you have your week off. Just leave your children behind. What do you think that was? If their children are left behind, they're more likely to come back. They're not going to just leave all their kids behind. Right? So Paro, by saying that, obviously is accusing them or thinking, let me assure that I'll give them the lousy week off, and they'll come back. You don't need kids to serve your God. Right? So here's what I would like to suggest. I must confess I have never seen this parish anywhere. Tell me if you think it's Shaykh, right? It was no lie. It was what was meant to be at the outset. They were supposed to serve God 3 days' journey out into the desert on the 18th of BC. The Torah does not record any such event. That event was supposed to be Korban Pesach. Some kind of event celebrating their freedom. Why did God originally say that it's 3 days' journey into the desert? For the sake of Bnei Yisrael. Because they couldn't fathom celebrating this commemoration in Egypt itself. Something they ended up doing, right? But originally, the original plan, philosophical notion here that says that God can sometimes change plans based on man's changing situation. But the original plan could not account for Jews slaughtering the God of the Egyptians in front of their eyes right in Egypt. How do I know this? I have proof of this. Because after the fourth plague, after Paro didn't do this after the first three plagues because the Egyptians were able to bring blood, the magicians were able to bring frogs. They couldn't do lice, but then remember, lice was not predicted. Plague number one and two were predicted. Lice just came of its own. Paro might have thought that the frogs were lice. Right? But when plague four happened, after being predicted, and Paro saw that none of the Arov bothered any of the Jews, but they devastated my land, that's what Paro told Moshe, okay, go out into the desert. 3 days' journey. I'm sorry, no, he didn't say it, sorry. Okay. He said, I'll give you your service to your God. Just don't do it in the desert. Worship your God here in Egypt. Sound familiar? What did Moshe respond when Paro said that? Just paraphrase in English.
It's like, do you want us to slaughter your God?
Yeah, if we would slaughter Hain Isbach, if we would offer this sacrifice in your land, we know that your people would stone us. We won't feel comfortable doing that. Right? Now, excuse me. That's exactly what we did. And the Egyptians didn't stone us. Right? What happened in between? Why was Moshe worried that they'll stone us after plague 4, but by plague 10, we comfortably slaughtered their God, damped its blood on our doorpost, roasted it so they could smell it, roasted it whole so they could see it, in your face disgrace, Egyptians.
Because at that point, people were looking at it.
At that point, they got the chutzpah. At the outset, and God knows the future, but still God works with us. He knows there aren't 50 men, righteous men in Sodom, but still he tells Amram, if there are 50 men, I'll save it. He knows they're not 45, 40, 30, 20, or 10 either. But God works with us according to our plan. Right? He knows that with Moshe that they're going to listen to the first signs. Why does he tell Moshe? Moshe, if they don't listen to the first sign I'm giving you, they'll listen to the second. Tell Moshe. Right? Following? So that's what the original plan was. Let's do it here. Let's do a 3 days' journey out in the desert. And then go. And then continue. But I didn't fool Paro. Paro fooled himself. How did he fool himself?
With the
but by thinking that we're coming back. I never said we're coming back. I never said we're going further. I just said we're going to worship our God. Three-day journey in the desert. My interpretation here doesn't say that that's a fabrication. It's no reference in the entire Torah to any worship, any service of God on the 18th of Nisan in the desert. Nothing. What did that end up being? What were we doing the night of the 10th plague? Right? The Egyptians were too busy worrying about their firstborns to do anything to us about eating their God. Now let's look at what B'nai Yisrael. So they're now out in the desert. They still, like Sforno says, they felt like runaway slaves. And here they see the on-rushing Egyptians. If this is correct, this whole thing, behind us is a thin little, you know, they might have been wondering themselves, why are you taking us here? Where are we going? Where is it leading us? I mean, it's nice, water on this side, water on that side. It's like a planted city, right? So, where are we going? Right? So, when they see the Egyptians coming, this is now the first challenge to Moshe. Perek Yudal was here. Got it all? You got it here? Shmos Yudal was here. Paro he kriv, but Yisub and Yisrael is a man being named Yitzrayim, no say after him. And they saw Egypt chasing after them. Together, Egypt, right? But Yeruma owed, they were very greatly scared, frightened, by Yitzakub and Yisrael al Hashem. By the way, it says that there were 600 chariots. How many of us are there? 600,000 men between 20 and 30. And 60. 600,000 fighting men being rushed by 600 chariots. And it says, by Yeruma Ovid. Of course, that's how it works. A lot of Jews sitting watching one Egyptian beating a Hebrew, and none of them can muster any strength, anything, to question whether this would be actually happening. It's only one person who wasn't used to that who stands up, right? And they cried out to God. And that's okay, but of itself. God, please save us from these guys! Yes?
Are we sure that when they were scared, it was because of the fact they were being chased? Or were they scared because now they know, they're on their own? They can't. A lot of people, they become most scared when they don't have, an exit. So it seems like now they are just they lost their home when they finally realized maybe they're not scared of 600 chariots. That should be terrifying for 600,000 people. But it puts into their minds, we are runaway slaves, we just have to figure out what to do.
Yes, now. I appreciate the thought process that goes into it in enunciating this question. But we have help answering you because they're going to say what they're afraid of.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to say, we're going to read from Psukim. Yes.
I think it's interesting in terms of the development of Moshe, how much B'nai Israel relied on him, because here it says by Yitzhaku El Hashem, and later on, before, it's something that happens by Yitzhaku El Moshe, from Hashem. So, originally, they words were dependent on Moshe, but they went to Hashem first. Then they still depend on Moshe as their leader. They go to Moshe first and say, Moshe, help us out, instead of saying, Hashem, help us out.
It's very interesting. It goes back to what we said about the chukas with the Me'er Meriba.
This isn't the next pasuk, right? You don't rule on Moshe. So maybe the Yitzhaku is really more of a spiritual plea, but not necessarily where their plea was directed, but really their plea was directed
towards Moshe. When you call out to God for something, right? Very rarely is there an immediate response.
Right.
When there isn't Tanakh, you see them when the sailors in the Yonah story, right? They get an immediate response when they called out to Yonah's God, right? And then it says Vayidrunu Darim, they became very firm, right? Some places where someone is, when Chana hears the bracha from Eli, she's so happy as if though she knows she's going to conceive because he gave her a bracha. right? You have to be in a certain mindset for that, to be sure. But here's what it is, that you when you call out to God like this, and you feel confident that there is that some good will come of this, so then you have the strength to now deal with it in a practical sense, which is, Moshe, you're the practical one. You know, how what's going to happen here? Yes. Well, I give you the same answer here. Let's read what they say. All right, Vayemru el Moshe. It's Vayitzaku el Hashem, but Vayemru el Moshe means they're not screaming in Moshe. This is the first time that they're dealing with such things. And they say, Hamibli ein kvarim b'mitzrayim l'kachtanu l'mus b'midbar. Wow. Is there a shortage of caskets in Egypt? A shortage of burial plots in Egypt that you had to take us out here to bury us in the desert? What have you done to take us out of Egypt? What? Come on, you have your freedom. No one's striping your back with a whip because of you're not producing. Not producing things you won't use yourself anyway. Right? And yet, they say, why did you take us out of Egypt in the first place? What? I told you why. I'm taking you to a land. God didn't take you out of Egypt just to have you die right here. Here's the thing. The people in the desert don't have vision. They can't see beyond the moment. That's going to be a problem all over the place. Right? Moshe's a prophet, and of course he sees the big picture. But they don't. Sometimes you can't blame them. Right? No matter how spiritual, no matter how Shekhinah functionary you are, and recognizing the Shekhinah, when you're going 6, 8, 10 hours in the desert, and your mind is parched by the heat of the desert sun, all kinds of other logical, accoutrements are going to leave. Right? You're not thinking straight.
Did Moshe ever tell the people this like inspirational speech that he's going to bring them into the land, or he was just kind of like, let's get out of here?
I mean, Hashem tells him at the burning bush. Whatever Hashem tells him, I assume he spoke to them.
When he spoke to the people, like, saying that, like, this is where our journey is going to end?
It may be. I'm willing to accept the idea that since Moshe wants to the very end, so the beginning of Parshas Peshawar, the power attack, you think we're returning, right? That he's worried that if he tells Bnei Yisrael, by the way, this is what I call power, but this is for you. And that word would have gotten, Edward G. Robinson would have leaped into power.
Right.
Edward G. Robinson plays the song.
Right. It makes sense, because Moshe was already messed over with the Jews telling on him.
And so it could be that he actually did not tell the Bnei Yisrael where we're going. But of course they had to be in on something, I guess. But, okay. All right, so they say, there's the shortage of burial plots in Egypt. This pasuk is one of those places that the Torah refers to something that's just not elsewhere in the Torah. Where did you see a pasuk like this in Parsha Shmos of Va'era? There's no pasuk like this. This is a pasuk of Bnei Yisrael tell Moshe we don't want to leave. Why does it say that? Right? So here it is. This is the pasuk that tells that there was a contingent of Jews who did not want to leave Egypt. Now, there is a Maimar Chazal like that, that during Makas Choshech, are you familiar with the Midrash? That during Makas Choshech, a sizable majority of the people died because they didn't want to leave Egypt. Right? That's why I heard from the newspaper. I thought that's what they say. If the Russia was there, he wouldn't have gone free. That's a pretty harsh way to speak to a kid to say that. Right? If you were there, you would have gone. Because he wouldn't have put love in the doorpost. He wouldn't have brought a court press up. I mean, doesn't Babir have to leave? Korach has to leave, right? But this kid, no. Right? So, Lamaisa, here is what they're saying. They're saying something here that's simply not found earlier in Shmos. Because we don't see anywhere in Shmos where they said it's better for us to serve Paro than to die in the desert. Adarabba, you know, I'll just tell you, it's a problematic pasuk, and I don't mind even saying that these guys are lying. There are only very few people who said this. These guys are mischaracterizing. Listen to this pasuk. Tell me if you it's part of the Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur liturgy. Zocharti loch chesed neuraich, ahavas chulosayich, lechtech acharai bamibor be'eretz lo zruah. It's a song, it's amazing, no? Right? It's one of the psukim of Zichronot on Rosh Hashanah. Zocharti loch chesed neuraich. I remember your chesed of your youth, when you first left Egypt. Ahavas chulosayich, the love of our marriage, of our early marriage. How? Lechtech acharai bamidbar be'eretz lo zeruah. Kol amar Hashem motzochim bamidbar. Right? Both those psukim are in Sefer Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu had been giving prophecy at a time where we're already 850 years after Yitzhak Mitzrayim. And things have gotten very bad in this long marriage between God and Israel. So he's trying to bring back when a couple married many years are starting to break down. They try to, go to a marriage therapist and first thing the marriage therapist tries to remind them is, remember the early part of your marriage when things were better. Can you go back to, can you reach back for that type of behavior, that type of relationship? Right? You hear it? So Yirmiyahu in chapter 2, Zochartu lo chesed, chapter 30, Matzochim bamidbar. If she tries to bring back that old time, what was the old time? What was it? Lechtech acharai bamidbar be'eretz lo zeruah. That you went after me into the desert in a land that could not be sown with seeds. And as Rashi says there in Sefer Yirmiyahu, Shne'emar v'gam tseido lo asu lahem. That's in Parshas Bo. V'gam tseido. What's it tseido? Provisions. They didn't make provisions. They left just blindly into the desert. God, we're following you. All I have is this backpack with some matzah in it. I'm with you. Show me where to go. Okay? What do they all need? Okay. Well, they had lots of livestock. Lots of livestock. Right? Okay. So. Come to the end of the Torah. Move in. God had lots of
livestock. If it was their God, if their God was the sheep,
they just sent us out with lots of stuff.
That's
Paro at first didn't want to. Then Moshe said, you're going to send us out with animals. Our children are gone. Our parents are gone. Our old ones are gone. Right? Okay. So, Vayomer Moshe al Ha'am. Al Tira'u. First thing, don't be afraid.
I can't be afraid.
You know the last few words you're supposed to say at night before you go to sleep? What's the last thing in Kriya Shema? The last thing is Adon Olam. The last words in Adon Olam. Hashem li v'lo yira. How can I be afraid? Right? Al tiro. Hisyatzu rishu shuas Hashem asher esel ocham hayom. Ki asher yisem es mitzrayim hayom lo tosifu lero sam od adolam Hashem yivachem lochem v'atem tachar mishem. This is a great moment for Moshe. Because Hashem has not told him what to do. He doesn't run into the old Moed of Sabbath Noah. Oh, he did. He doesn't turn away from him and say, God, in a minute they're going to stone me. And I'm saying, Moshe like the exact opposite of Parshas Korach. Again, cutting slack, his sister just died. But he just takes his own initiative. He's a prophet, of course. He says, no, God tells him what to do. But he takes his own initiative. You see that how this is so different? And he just says, guys, don't be afraid. God would not take you down to this point to drive you into this wedge here so that the Egyptians could kill you and force you into the water. Right? When are you going to realize that there's a plan to everything? Right? So Moshe takes the initiative. He says, Hashem Elohim, God will fight for you. Attempted to shouldn't stop fetching. Stop. It's not the time to cry. In the Gemara in Masechta Sota, it says that Moshe was praying at this point. And Hashem tells him, Moshe, there's a time to pray and there's a time to act. This is the time to act. Daber ka'la'am b'yisot. Don't stay here. Where should you go? Keep going out towards the water. Now Moshe in the Medrash didn't say, God, what good is that? We can stand here and make a stand, or we can escape to the water and swim to the other side. Part will meet us at the other side. They'll kill us here. What point is there for all this? It's the time to act. Keep going. Keep going into the end of this mystery. And you'll see what I'm going to do.
Okay. You must have already been questioning why they didn't go through their state, right? Because they're already going to round about.
Yeah, well, according to, I must admit that if this is true, this is their parents' Plishtim.
Oh, yeah.
According to this, they went down here, according to most contemporary opinions. They went this way. I mean, you can avoid Plishtim by doing this, too. They went all the way down here, because they go into a body of water. There's no water here. A lot of distance.
Well, they come around that side though, so how do they get with that side from the Mediterranean?
Well, here is where they were slaves, not down here. So the quickest way to go to where they're the one that they're being is here.
I thought they come in from that side though. They come in across the Jordan.
No, they ended up after 40 years, here.
So they crossed the direct the Elam Sea.
Well, what happened after this, everyone can agree, is this. But did this happen right away up here, or did it happen right away down there? On foot, you can make it to where they were slaves down to here. It says in the Torah that from where they were slaves to the land of Israel was 11 days journey.
Well, it seems like this way is a much easier chase for the Egyptians than down to Elam.
Yeah,
another harder to catch.
And this is probably not so much scale, but whatever. Okay, so but you see that Moshe's gumption, he's so strong and he knows exactly how to deal with the situation. If you turn to Perek Tesvav, this one is even more significant because this one is after Kriyas Yamsuf. They just sang Shira for goodness sakes. It's V'Aminu Masher V'Moshe Avdo. I mean, there's Emunah here, right? And right afterwards, I mean, but what can I say? It's how people are. What have you done for me lately? Right? Perek Tesvav Pasuk Chavet V'Yasa Moshe Sistro V'Yamsuf. So the next journey, Tesvav Chav Beis, everyone get it. Vayasa is the Egyptians. He caused them to journey from Yamsuf and Vayetsu El Midbar Shur. Midbar Shur is down here. So obviously it's either they're doing this or they're doing this. Okay? Now, 3 days of not drinking in the desert is going to kill everyone. they have somewhat, I mean, that's a long time ago now, water. The rabbis could not believe that this literally meant water, and determined from here that going 3 days without water should never be done. What's our minimum today? That we did today, so we wouldn't do that. What did we do today? Well, I shouldn't say today, yesterday, I should say. You know, we never go 3 days without reading the Torah. Right? Shabbos, Monday, Thursday. Thursday would be 3 days. If you don't get the Torah on Thursday, you're going to be in a sort of circuit. I haven't heard the Torah since Monday. I can't go to Shabbos without hearing the Torah. Right? So that's the COVID drives that in here. Which, of course, makes us ask, wonder, whether, what does the Gemara Baba Kama that Pei Aleph mean when it says that Ezra made his comments read on Monday and Thursday? The simple answer is that Ezra's Tekonah was to read three Eliyahs and ten Tzotzim. Moshe's Tekonah was to read three Tzotzim. Open the Torah and read. Okay, Vayavo Mara Sabal Oyaful Lishtos Mayan Mara Kimarim Hay. Right? They went to a place called Mara. And they couldn't drink from the water that was there because the waters were bitter. Alkein Kara Shmo Mara. Whatever the name was before, it's not listed here. All right. That's why it was called Mara. Maybe it was called that before. The waters were bitter. This is worse than not having water at all. To see water and to find out it's a mirage, or even if it's not a mirage, it's real water, but it's just, it'll kill us. Right? But you won't know Allah Moshe lay more money shed. Right? What are we going to drink? But you talk to Hashem, again, they cry out, this time it's Moshe calling out to God. But you read what Hashem eats. God sent forth a tree for him. But you shlech el hamayim. Moshe put the water, says it was an olive branch, but Moshe put the water into the stick into the water to show the people anything's possible. Stop your disbelief. We can deal with any setback. Just have faith. Okay? Now, what do we mean by Shom Som Lo Cho Mishvot Bisham Yisrael? It crept into Rashi's Perush, a misprint. Rashi says that they were given Chok and Mishvot here. Okay, fine, that's a Gemara in Sanhedrin. And the Targum Yonasan to the Pasuk actually makes reference to this Gemara by saying that they were given 10 mitzvahs here. Seven with the seven mitzvahs from Noach. And when it says Sham Sam Maklo Chok Umishvat, Sham Sam, Sham there, Sam, was given to them by the others with much of the same thing. Chok Umishvat. So here are the three extra dinim. What appears in Rashi's Perush is dinim, that's Mishvat, Shabbos, because they got Shabbos before Matan Torah in this parasha. Right? They were already told about Shabbos at the month. The month has happened already. This pasuk, no, the month has not happened. But they gave the 10 mitzvahs that they got at Mara were 7 mitzvahs in Noah, Dinim, Shabbos, and what's the 10th? Paradula. You knew it. Right? That's the misprint. No way they got Paradula at this point. First of all, the Gemara says explicitly they got Paradula on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Paraduma is a result of Yehuda, which hasn't happened yet. Right? And the Gemara that says the list of the 10 mitzvahs doesn't list Paraduma. It lists Kibbutz Avaim. Why Kibbutz Avaim? Kibbutz Avaim and Shabbos. Because at the mitzvah of Kibbutz Avaim and Shabbos in the Aseres Adibros, it says, Ka'asher Tzivi Sicha. That's what it says. Ka'asher Tzivi Sicha. Honor your parents the way I commanded you. Where? Here at Mara. Shabbos, it says, of course, Shemor Shem Shabbos Kacho, Ka'asher, CVC, keep Shabbos like I commanded you. In other words, before Aseres Dibros, we were commanded by these two. The third is Dinah, because of Mishpah. How did Paraduma get in there? Because Chok, Chok Mishpah. All right? This is what happened, most scholars say. That someone wrote it that way, Kibbutov, and it got a little trickle there of ink, and it looked like Hora Adul. It's supposed to be Chof Aleph, someone read it as Pei Aleph. But Hora Adul definitely is not the one here. It should be Kibbutov. Right? Who says that? I bet Avraham Berliner, the commentary to Rashi, said it. It's a misprint. It shouldn't be Paraduma. Rashi himself says that the Paraduma came as a result of the Ego. So it's a misprint to say that the Paraduma happened well before the Ego. Yes, lots of misprints given by that part with Karpesa. There were others, yeah. But this was given in Mara. Right. Beginning of next class, I'm going to have a whole different interpretation of what this is. Kishon Soma Bok Mishpat Kishon Yizau Rashbam and other commentaries. And that's really what could be a good segue as to what Moshe was supposed to get from Bnei Yisrael these days, these years of the desert. What am I supposed to teach you? We're going to do that, Mitzvah Shem. And the other three lines here, you see, it says Egyptians thirst, hunger, Masim, Reba, Molech. I can see that. Okay, we'll continue with those through the last three. We did the first two today. We'll continue with the last three, please God, on Thursday.